as part of Puppet Themed Week. That's right. We've been talking about everything. Mystery Science Theater, Sesame Street. It's time to conclude it with R-rated puppets. So we just figured we'd revisit the Puppet Master universe. And who other than that, than Good Bad Flicks helmsman, Cecil Trachtenberg. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, man.
He has the potential to become the ultimate full moon king, but he's all out of trancers, and he doesn't have enough subspecies in his diet.
Well, dry hairs for squids.
For those wondering what the hell we're talking about. Okay, so Charlie Band made plenty of crazy movies you might have seen on Showtime and Sci-Fi Channel growing up, and these were those movies. Killer Dolls, Zombies from the Future, other just lowbrow and yet, you know, hardly what you could even call a guilty pleasure just because of the amount of effects and comedians and other weird genre B-movie actors.
Well, Charles always had an affinity for puppets. I read his autobiography and he didn't really go into it too much, but he's always just had this affinity for that. So that's why so many of his movies have had marionettes and puppets and stop motion animation and all that. It's always just fascinated him. So I think that his quintessential one has to be the Puppet Master series. I think that while more people might attribute him with the Ghoulies movie, I really feel that Puppet Master was kind of his just baby. This was the one that he really
came for.
And I mean, and we're up to what? I think we're on 11 now, including the sort of reboot that came. Oh, no. And then there was the spinoff Blade. So yeah, there Blade the Iron Cross. So there might be 12 now.
You need someone else besides Indiana Jones to kill them Nazis, man. So what other than Killer Dolls?
Exactly. And that kind of fluctuate back and forth. You know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're evil. It really depends on who's writing it and who's doing it that day.
So. Have you heard of any of Charlie's new podcasts?
You know what? As much as I love Charlie, I really haven't listened to any of them yet. And I should. I always forget.
It hit me out like of aisle five. I was like, what? I had no idea. But yeah, Full Moon Freak Show. And I only knew about it because he was interviewed recently on Kevin Lane's Spill Your Guts. But like you just said, he did kind of just pretty much just talk about his recent autobiography book and then just say, I just love just stop motion. I've been a fan since Jason and the Argonauts. Give me those effects. Sell me on that trailer, and I want to make that kind of crazy movie in return.
Yeah, he just has a passion for it, and I love that. I love that he more or less stuck with that until the money ran out. I still love Charlie. I will always love Full Moon. I am very torn because some of the new movies, the quality is just. But I understand that the market is just completely.
Oh, yeah. Different. He's been doing that with other stuff. I can't even get into Evil Bong or Ginger Dead Man. But again, I can't blame him for wanting to capitalize on that success. Like, I see so many people who will hate watch his movies. And I'm like, but see, here's the thing. Like, you can't say this is the same as any of the do-it-yourself garbage you've seen on Amazon Prime or crazy Tubi originals or even U-Ball type stuff where the guy just wanted to piss everybody off, you know. Like, this guy is just experimenting with all kinds of crazy stuff. He's a B-movie guy. Like, he's as close as you got to Roger Corman still working, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and there's even in the lower tier stuff, it's still like there's effort there. And like the Killed, you know, as of more recently, the Killjoys, I don't know if they haven't made a Killjoy in a while, but it was like Killjoy, Evil Bong, and they had a lot of success. They had a lot of success recently with the 50-foot cam girl and the Gigantus Attack and those. And the thing is, like, they're movies that people watch to trash, to just, oh, these are awful. And so
it's Jim Wynorski and Fred Olen Ray. So you're like, it's a whole different pedigree altogether.
Exactly. Which is really sad with me because Jim Wynorski and Fred Olen Ray, when given a good script and a budget, they have a track record where they've proven that they can do really good movies. Mm-hmm. But anymore, I mean, they've both lamented. They're like, the market just isn't there. And they try to get something else, but then the only thing that they can do is like Bigfoot's Wild Weekend or something.
Yeah. I asked the Schlock Pit why they seem to have counter moments, and it seems like half the time they just want to fuck with fans too. And you're just like, why are you guys doing that? Are you schizophrenic? Because like, it, nothing wrong with that, but it would explain a lot. Because like, there are times where, what was it, Jim was saying, oh, I don't want to come on your podcast because it was like this one podcast called like, because it's called Schlock. And then he comes on this other podcast called Bad Movies. And it's like, well, what the hell, Jim?
Yeah, really? What's the bad Schlock? Yeah, what's the difference? I've had people who have avoided me before because when they hear, you know, good, bad flicks, they think one of two things.
He's going to make fun of me.
I'm either going to make fun of it or I am going, you know, I cover like bad movies. And I'm like, I'm like, because usually I'll send them a link and I'll like, look here, I'm talking about a wide variety of movies. Or I have people that'll jump on in the comments. It'll be like, this isn't a bad movie. And I'm like, when in the video did I say that this was a bad movie?
I would say some snobs on your videos. You did one on Transfers Free, and I saw some people disagreeing. Oh, no one likes the third one. I'm like, says who? He just said some fans generally like the third Transfers. That's all he said.
Yeah, like the third one, you can't deny that the third one is the best produced one. Like the third one has the highest quality, I think. Now, whether or not that translates to you enjoying it the most, like I personally love 2 because 2 was my first Transfers movie.
Yeah, it's a perfect trilogy.
It really is. And actually, I just had, I was at the Sci-Fi Horror Con. I was a guest there last month. And I had dinner with all the guests, the other guests right there. And I was talking with R.A. Mihailov, if I'm hopefully saying his last name right. And he was there to promote, he was Leatherface in the third Texas Chainsaw movie.
Lovely.
And I didn't know until he left, and I'm like, I should have checked. He was Shark in Transfers 3. And I'm like, oh my God, I would have just asked him nothing but questions about playing Shark. Because I know that I had talked to Peter David, who wrote 3. And he still has the head of Shark on his desk that he works at, where he had it made into a lamp. And I'm like, that's amazing. But I totally would have asked him nothing but questions about Shark. And a lot of times you get somebody like that who he's probably so burned out on talking about Leatherface that you bring up another project that he worked on. And as long as it was a good experience, then they're more than happy to talk to you about it. But instead, he was telling me how to make homemade potato chips. And that was very it was really cool. He was he's a gigantic dude. He was very, very tall and he was very nice. But it was really funny. Just of all the things
we're talking
about.
It's just kind of like general henchmen. People assume, oh, because you played a rapist or killer serial killer, you must be crazy in real life. I'm like, acting.
It's a job. I find that usually the actors who will often play like the good guys are usually the standoffish ones.
They're on set on time, and the lead is the one who's spoiled and refusing to remember their lines, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, meanwhile you got a character actor who he's played, you know, henchman number 5 in 50 movies and is just the most down-to-earth, nicest guy. I met Angus Scrimm years ago.
Oh, the tall man. Before, there you go.
Yeah, the tall man. And I went up and I was like, I gotta tell you, you terrified me as a child. And he was like, oh no. He's like, I'm just an old man. Like, he was so nice. And I'm like, it was just like, I had this just wonderful memory of him being such a pro. Like, he was genuine. I mean, seriously, he terrified me when I was little. And so I'm just sitting
there.
Yeah. He's, I mean, God, he's just a boy, you know? Oh, he was amazing. So, but yeah, but then meeting him, and he was just the nicest guy you could possibly could meet.
Rest in peace.
I know, poor. I mean, I'm glad I got to meet him before his passed. So, because there's a
and
lot.
You'll
of
remember
it.
That the rest of your life.
I, you know, and my was were we married? I'm trying to think. Were we married? I think we were married at the time when I met him. I was there with my wife, and she met him too, and she hadn't seen any of the Phantasm movies yet.
She's just like, your hubby, you're with your kind.
Yeah, she was like, she's like, oh, you're, you know, she's this nice, you know, this nice guy, and he got a picture with her, and she's like, I want to really watch his movies now. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, wait till you see. And so we watched it, and she couldn't, she's like, how? She's like, that guy was so nice.
Oh man. Tough stuff.
Yeah, but back on the Charlie Band stuff, I love Puppet Master 2 so much, and a lot of people go with Blade being their most popular. You know, I mean Blade is the most popular.
He's kind of the leader of it, but it is wild. Yeah, you don't always hear their names, but I got to still tip my hat to him because you love the arts and crafts. The stop motion actually, in a way, kind of makes it freaky at times. And there's just such a sense of fun that comes on screen every time that this is one of those. It's probably one of the few direct video franchises that I've seen have an audience, you know, yeah, in general, but it's, you know, some of them have gone to the theater, some of them have gone to TV. And so they always found a way to just stand out in some way, and just kind of, again, kind of like Evil Dead, it was just a crazy B movie franchise, and kind of in many ways it's like Maniac Cop. You can like it literally or in a trashy way or in a so bad it's good way. It doesn't matter, just embrace it.
Yeah, one way or the other, you're going to enjoy it. I think when it gets to, I think it's part 8, either 7 or 8, I don't remember off the top of my head, but whichever one is the clip show, I know that's when people are like,
the legacy.
I'm starting to see I'm starting to see the limitations here. Cause what happened was 4 and 5. That's right. It was 1 was under Empire, mm-hmm, and then 2 was 2 and 3 were Full Moon, and 3 was when the Paramount deal was in full swing. And then that one was great. And then they got the budget for 4, and they decided that they were going to stretch that into 2 movies, which, as Charlie does sometimes. So 4 and 5 is really one movie, mm-hmm, but they stretched it into 2. And then
6 was six crazy.
Was the, yeah. 6 was the one with Tank, Tank Hankerus or whatever,
or they're like slaughtering people at a camp, and you're just like, oh, okay, so it's kind of a Friday the 13th kind of tribute show. But Retro Puppet Master gets even more confusing because it's using stock footage and then just kind of a loose spinoff, and it's kind of been rediscovered. I would put this down as the best moments, just because it was one of Greg Sestero from The Room's first roles.
Exactly. I think it got rediscovered. I mean, for people that were already into the Puppet Master, it got rediscovered by non-Puppet Master fans because they were looking into Greg Sestero's stuff, and he is surprisingly good in it. Like, he's really not terrible. Like,
he mentions he had trouble finding roles because it was one of his few movies where he's actually acting and saying dialogue. But I'm with you. I feel like he gave it his all, because considering, you know, this is already a lowbrow saga, so it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was looking at it from the perspective of he might be able to get a consistent job out of this. Okay, here's a franchise. I might be the new Puppet Master guy or something. And, you know, that didn't happen. But, I mean, he really tried.
They should bring him back at this rate. Just say, hey.
Oh, I think he would totally do it. I think he would do it.
He totally would do it. He can laugh at himself.
Yeah. I mean, God, he had no problem with all the stuff at the room and everything. So I think that now, granted, they probably would have to pay him a little bit more, but because I think they didn't pay him very much for his. But I mean, but that's, you know, that's just any actor going, you know, in a movie. But
people change. But I think the first one is pretty well liked, just because it's kind of, it's unhinged in many ways, and you're seeing gruesome stuff happen to unlikable people, and there's just something about just all the tension in that whole movie that I think that's the reason it's kind of been found by so many people. It's been, it was a well-marketed movie by Paramount back in the day, and now it's, I would constantly see parts of it on AMC, and it was very just disturbing.
I think, I know, I don't know how, like, I don't know, the details were never officially released, but I know, I'm sure it wasn't cheap to fully acquire, you know, reacquire all the Full Moon assets. Because I know Charlie had a lot of things just in a vault. And I'm sure Paramount was trying to lock them down, as studios often do. So I'm glad he got them, because he has been remastering them, and we're getting them in widescreen, and they look beautiful. They look bad, because that is the beauty of shooting on film, is that you're taking, you could take these, remaster them, and re-release it and blow it up to like 8K if you want to.
And he has a great sense of humor. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen his convention videos where he's like interviewing people, like the late great Larry Cohen. And at one point, he even says, "If you people want me to stop making these movies, stop buying my shitty movies." I'm like, yeah. I love it. I love it. I see anyone else. I mean, we love Roger Corman, but he at times comes off as a little too proud. Like, people are just jealous, making fun of my movies on Mystery Science Theater. And it's like, yeah, well, it's going to happen. But I love how it's just, Charlie's just like, hey, I mean, his sense of humor is apparent in all of his movies. I mean,
Well, Charlie is just he's a showman. You know, he's like, I am delivering what people want. He's trying to make he's trying to make a combination of things. Some movies are the movies that he wants to see, but in general, he will make the movies that he thinks the audience wants. And time again, he's proven right, because he's still making them. Now, granted, he's not making them on the scale that he used to, because the market is so different. It's but digital. I don't doubt if he could get in with a studio backing, something where, even if he got, like, let's say, go back to the old days, go back to like 500,000, a million per movie, I think that the quality would drastically improve, because the movies that they're doing now, they're making them over the course of like a week or two for like 50K. And and it's all digital. It's all bad CG. I shouldn't say all, but mostly. And they're just not there. But I think that if he was able to go back to get that level, because he's got the access to the talent. There's so many of the directors that he knows, and there's so much FX guys and whatnot that would be able to work under those circumstances. Would be able to deliver a good old fashioned Puppet Master movie or something, but. He just for whatever reason just hasn't been able to find somebody that wants to deal with him in that way. I guess there's just the
Dave Allen was market. His main motion capture guy for a while, and he passed away. So he's finally
Allen died in 1999, sadly. Right. But so yeah, I think that more so it's not even just all the effects guys, but I mean, I'm just saying it comes down to just the budget that he's being able to get, and it's a bummer. But I mean, I'm still glad that he's going. I still love his stuff. I'm still happy at the end of the day that he continues to make movies. And I really do got to watch his podcast, because he, like you said, he is hilarious.
Oh, and you know, he also doesn't hold back. He's like, yeah, we've had some good years, we've had some bad years, and you know, no one could have predicted that we were all going to stop watching stuff on VHS, and then later. Now we're at the pick and choose level. Some people still want to do Blu-ray and DVD, and other people are still like streaming, you know, if it's not on there, I'm not watching. So it's, I think he's just at the predicament where it's like, if you really want this, you know, you'll come and find it. And then he finds alternatives for all these other people. And out of all the sequels, which do you feel is kind of like the strongest moment, like you would want to introduce people to? Because like, I think the beauty of this saga is, if you don't like one, you're going to watch the next one. You don't have to watch it that literally or that deeply, but it doesn't hurt either.
I would say across the board, if there was somebody who was interested in getting into the franchise, I would be one of two questions for me. It's like, if they were somebody I knew that really liked thrillers and sort of mysteries and that kind of thing, I would probably start them with Puppet Master 1. Whereas if they liked horror and action, like they were leaning more towards action, I would probably start with 3. Because 3, I think, is the best produced and just the biggest crowd pleaser.
Richard as much Lynch as the major,
yeah, Richard Lynch is the evil Nazi guy, you know. Yeah, and you've got the really good Andre Toulon, and the puppets are actually the good guys. It's a big crowd pleaser movie. And even though, like I said previously, 2 is my all-time favorite, it's the one that introduced me to the franchise, it's the one that got me into Full Moon to begin with.
Nice.
And but I don't think that it is a like for me, because I'm, you know, I saw it in God 1990. So I saw it way back, like introducing somebody to it now, they wouldn't react to it as strong. They would probably just laugh at it and they wouldn't see it as like, I think if they went and saw 3 and did enjoy that, then you could go back and, okay, well, look, we're going to show you 2. And it's like, you don't, even though 3 is number 3, it doesn't matter. You know, it's a story that stands on its own. They all more or less stand on their own, with the exception of 4 and 5, because they were shot back to back. But they all kind of stand on their own. So you can kind of pick and choose. All right, I'm going to watch 2, 3, 1, 4, 5, you know. So I would eventually introduce them to 2. Like, I had... My wife is more into thrillers, so I actually showed her the movies in order. So we started with 1, and she kind of liked that because it was more of like a mystery. And then 2, she enjoyed because it was so corny. And then, like I said, 3, she really enjoyed because it was the just the big swashbuckling Indiana Jones puppets.
Yeah, totally. And there is an unusual sense of adventure, and just the music kind of reminds you of just kind of how goofy this whole saga is.
It's really, really, it almost tonally is like a Hogan's Heroes, you know?
Yes.
Like,
oh my God. Yes.
Because yeah, it's just really silly. And I really do enjoy 3. And I think that going back to good directors, David Okoto, is a really good director who has fallen into a rut of making these really bad movies all at the same location. He made all those, what were they, 13-13 or
yeah, just unwatchable. And you're just like, he's kind of in that same fan window where you're just like, well, he used to be able to do cool stuff, but
yeah, I know you can do better. I've seen you do better. But he did all those. He did the Talking Cat and all those movies. And they're for me, I'll watch them and laugh. But in general, if you are just your average moviegoer, you're going to see that and immediately turn it off. So
yeah, because it's just know. Like it looks like a student film, and you just are just so confused because the decisions they're making are just illogical, and you're just like, I can't, you know. That's how I am with you of all, where I'm like, no, that's not even Mr. Science Theater level. That's not even Elvira or Joe Bob, where you're watching a goofy movie at 2 in the morning. You need just something to cling on to.
Yeah. Uwe Boll was interesting. I interviewed him 2 times a few years, like God, Yeah, probably about 6 years ago now.
I think that's how he got so many people on, is he can be nice, but we know him kind of just personally, you know, from a, well, public image, from just wanting to challenge everybody and fight.
Yeah, he got a lot of respect from me, because when I first interviewed him, when I started, I was like, look, I just, before we do, I want to let you know, I don't like your work. I really don't like your movies. And I was like, I think they're really poorly made. And he was like, that's fair. And then he talked to me and we got into why they were made that way and all. And it was just, it was very interesting. And he was a lot more humble than I had suspected. And I appreciated the fact, like, I wasn't going to go in and kiss his ass. I went in and told him flat out, like, look, dude, I don't like your work. Like, there's a couple of your things that I thought were had potential and were good, but in general, your video game movies were god awful, and they made it really hard for video game movies moving forward, because nobody wanted, like, movie studios, they aren't looking to see, oh, this one was made by Uwe Boll and he was using a German tax loophole to kind of to just crap this movie on.
Yes.
Quality didn't matter. They're just looking at, oh, well, here was this movie and this movie and this movie, and they were all based on video games and they all flopped. Like, they're not looking at them from a quality perspective. They're looking at, oh, this is a video game movie and it failed. So, but he was an interesting guy. I was very glad to talk to him. I learned
even
a lot.
The most infamous people are still very fascinating. Like, I can't watch any of Jess Franco's movies, but I still want to know, you know.
Oh yeah.
How this guy work in South America with the great Orson Welles and create all these bizarre lesbo vampire stupid movies, you know, it's always hysterical, just because there's a story behind every movie. And I mean, that's half the time back when we did physical media, the joke was buy a Jim Wynorski movie and then listen to the commentary track where he just literally rips himself a new one or talks about other hysterical trivia that you're like, no, you're telling me that happened on this goofy movie? Well, okay.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy, you gotta sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast wrecks and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in, it's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it was Fred Olin Ray on Jacko in the commentary.
Oh yes, and he's just like making fun of Steve Latshaw, who's taking his movie way too seriously.
Yes. And doesn't he leave at one point?
I think so. I didn't listen to it, but I remember that being like reviews of the movie, and it's just like, I remember talking to Latshaw online one time and he's like, why are you comparing my movie to Die Hard? I'm basing this off disaster movies. I'm like, that's what people usually mean by it when they mean Die Hard. You're emulating an Earthquake or Towering Inferno kind of, you know, takeover movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he has a bad big head, and I've heard him on a Dolph Lundgren themed podcast one time, and he seems nice. I don't know. I really don't know. I think he just, I mean, I wouldn't be much fun either if people were making fun of a movie I was passionate about, but at the same time, I mean, you gotta be really ego-headed if you think that movie is a defining moment of your career too. So, I mean, I don't know.
It's such an odd thing. I think some directors and at producers and whatnot, they do fall in love a little bit too much with the thing that they've made, and they aren't always the most objective to it. They're seeing it as this is something wonderful, and a lot of times it's just not. I'm from the perspective of I've seen so many movies that are god awful, unwatchable. So something like that, if you worked on that and you're proud of that, then that's cool. Like, I mean, that had practical effects. It had a storyline that you could follow. It was like the audio was good. Like, I'm looking at all like the different aspects of it that make up the film, because I've seen movies with like no white balance, bad CG, crappy audio, out of focus cameras.
Stuff that's not ready for prime time, where you're just like, whoa, how did anyone who checks the quality of this let this fly? You know, because
like, if you're proud of that, then okay, you're just deluding yourself.
Oh, totally. There was a bunch of guys who I would see and who are still working today who kind of made a living being screen queens and been doing all other kinds of slashers and ridiculous sci-fi horror movies in like places like Atlanta and Florida and North Carolina. And you look at some of their earlier movies and it's out of print or ridiculous price on Amazon and any of the other ones you have seen, you're like, yeah, there's no way this played on even USA Network or Showtime. Like, this is too, like you're saying, too much bizarre, lack of sepia tones, just shot on videotape. And like, even, you know, We make fun of all the goofy movies that we've talked about before, but most of them at least had, you know, again, they followed the basics where there was a plot and there was, you know, it was limited in budget, but there wasn't too much oversaturated light and all that other shit. Like, if you talk about a stupid movie that's on Cinemax or Sci-Fi Channel, they're still, they got point A, B, and C down. It's just a matter of, you know, whether the plot's any fun or not, you know, it's and you know, these movies were the kind where just like, ooh, I
yeah, how did anybody get this? I like some movies just they're unwatchable, and I am very forgiving when it comes to lower budgeted films. I am like, I think the bigger the budget, the less forgiving I get. Like, if I'm watching a $300 million movie and it's got bad special effects, then I am going to just really lay into them about that. Because it's like, you have all the money in the world. You could have afforded to fix this. You could have afforded to make this look good.
If we break up on this podcast, you know, and we're always varying on whether we come in or out, at least you can still hear us and everything. We can enhance various parts of it. But yeah, then we see some of these other movies and shows and we're like, okay, so the money just went to the star who was there for 2 days, because there's nothing else that makes sense about this.
It's just, or you like in the cases of something like the Green Lantern movie, for example, that came out.
Oh, there you go.
The effects in that were awful. And I actually ended up talking to one of the guys that worked on it. And long story short, they did these really amazing looking effects, and the director came in and was like, no, these look wrong. They need to look really, really, really fake. And so they were like, all right. And so they went back and they took everything they had and made it look really, really, really fake. And then what happened? Everybody hated it. So yeah. That's a case of where that was just a misfire from the director.
They did the same with Godzilla 98. They had done all these practical effects, and then the Sony guys took it over and said, let's add all these other CGI on top of it. And it's wild how, and you know, Roland Emmerich, you know, is in love with himself, so he was cool with either one. So it's just like, I just don't understand why people just don't seem to realize there's too many cooks in the kitchen. That, yeah, it just always seems to come down to, and then they get down to the finish line and kind of like Bonfire of the Vanities, they pull up, you know, that, which is covered on the Plot Thickens podcast by Turner Classic Movies. I love how they always go, we like this movie, but we don't know how to sell it. I'm like, you didn't think about that before you greenlit this movie? The Offer, which I recommend, the miniseries that talks about the making of The Godfather, is another example too. And it's one of those where it just reminded me on how no one wants to make a giant epic that's 3.5 hours anymore. You know, Lord of the Rings got by very luckily without any interference, but again, that didn't happen overnight. Some people wanted to talk about, you know, something like Lawrence of Arabia, which was good, but most people didn't see the uncut version of for a while. Then there's Heaven's Gate, which everyone fucking hated at the time, but some people like now. So, you know, it's just, we still will have other 3 hour epics, but it seems like it's gotta be like kind of a Chris Nolan thing. I think he's the only one who people will leave alone now.
Yeah, he somehow just...
Dennis Villeneuve, maybe someone of that.
Yeah, maybe. Heaven's Gate got fixed. What happened was the studio re-edited the film and released
it. Yes, they did. Yeah.
And it just did it. And one of the producers, I believe the director, had gotten a hold of it and worked with Criterion and was able to put out like a proper director's cut. And then it got reassessed and it's like, oh, now we see what he was going for. And now they're saying that the movie is great. And it's like, well, like, I am always leaning in favor of the director. Every now and then a director will do some boneheaded maneuver and the movie will end up failing for it. But at the end of the day, I will always side with the directors simply because it's their name that's on the line. If a producer comes in and alters the film and then the movie comes out and that version flops miserably, the producer doesn't get shit for it. It's the director who...
Brewster was on Andy Richter's podcast. They've known each other since his hysterical sitcom. And, you know, she's been on a bunch of stuff, Criminal Minds, Community. And she talked about, you know, if you're on a TV pilot that doesn't take off, they almost always blame you.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, well, this star's been in a lot of shows that have been canceled. It's like, I didn't have anything to do with the damn scripting and presentation or how it got scheduled.
Yeah, they just want to look for a scapegoat, and it's always somebody who is not one of the money people. It's not like the idiot that made the terrible decision to change something. You know, it's not the right person that's, oh, well.
I talked to the director of Ballistic X versus Sever, and he's not proud of it either. I keep teasing him, release the director's cut, you know, but same kind of deal. Andrew Stevens, who's made it, you know, made a nick also for doing crazy B pictures as well as big budget David Mamet type productions for studio. That was kind of his own canon films, you know, and it's just funny too, how people assume, you know, same thing with the script, the Writers Guild is such bullshit. If no matter how many times you rewritten it, they will only blame or give it to whoever started it. As same thing with directors. And it's just like, well, The Wizard of Oz had freaking 30 directors back in its day. You know, it is possible to have a lot of names without it necessarily being bad, but you know, it still is hard to believe at times. Like, my sister always gets tense when she sees 5 writers in the credits. She's like, I don't know, too many cooks, you know?
Yeah. I always crack up when you see something like that, where it's a movie like The Flintstones.
Absolutely.
And there's just 10 writers or something. And it's like, why did this take so many people? And then you watch it, you're like, for that? Like, for the most safe adaptation, and it took that many people. And it's like, because it went through so many different hands. And I find it is possible to have a movie where you have 3, 4, 5 writers on and the end result ends up being good. But
absolutely.
I think that there is a better chance if you have like 1 or 2 writers and that's it.
Promise.
And then there's a high, I more often than not will find that if a movie has less writers on it, the quality of it is almost...
Absolutely. I'm okay with an actor ad-libbing something, but don't tell me, you know, I must love this if, you know, and now, you know, we have our cell phones and other stuff. So if anything happens behind the scenes, it's more than tabloids that ruin a movie. You know, it's even it gets even more annoying when you encounter a snob and you're having to tell them, hey, you've heard bad things about this movie, but have you actually seen it? Okay, you've lost the right to make fun of it. You know, if you haven't seen, you know, you still got to watch something like Waterworld or Event Horizon or Virtuosity before you start lampooning it, because every movie has an audience. And, you know, Puppet Master is one of those two. It's kind of critic proof. Everyone's going to watch it out of morbid curiosity. Killer dolls? Oh, is it funny? Is it goofy? Is it freaky? It's kind of everything. And if I had to recommend any of the sequels to wrap up this, I would definitely say I kind of like the Demonic Toys versus movie.
Oh, yeah.
Much like Dollman, it's just very easy to go to. The laser traps are bonkers, bananas, and Corey Feldman's kept in check on, you know, unlike any of these other 80s has-beens who would often just, you know, be misbehaving and barely a movie comes out of it, but it moves along very fast.
I dare I say a little too fast. Like, that's my only complaint, is that it's too short.
Yeah,
but I don't dislike it. I wanted more, is kind of the thing. So,
which was so surprising, because I saw it was one of the lower rated ones, and then I saw it and I'm like, meh, this is more of a Boa versus Python kind of movie. It's that kind of, you know, goofy Happy Meal TV dinner movie.
Yeah, you watch it and it's like, okay, you maybe don't really remember it very much the next day, but
no, but at least you weren't looking at your watch saying, you know, I could have watched that live when it premiered on Sci-Fi Channel and not been like some of their other movies, just, you know, looking at my watch waiting for something better to come on, you know.
Yeah, all right, it's got 15 more minutes of this, and then I can flip over to Battlestar Galactica or whatever.
Yeah.
Something else.
Stargate's on. Oh. Yikes. So, Cecil, I didn't realize you were involved with those recent documentaries. Would you care to promote some more of those? I've been meaning to check them out.
Yeah. If you are looking for... Probably the best way to describe it is, if you're looking for multiple hours of recommendations, that is the In Search of Darkness trilogy, 1, 2, and 3. One, we cover horror. It's all about 80s horror. So we're covering the more mainstream stuff with part one. It's the Friday the 13th, the Halloween. We couldn't not do 80s horror and not talk about those. Two, we went off into a little bit more of the obscure stuff. We were talking about some of the lesser known horror films. And then three, we went really obscure. We're talking the direct-to-video stuff, just a lot of very bizarre films. And we got all the people involved that made the films. We got you know, John Carpenter. We got so many different directors and producers and the special effects guys. And then you got people like me who are, you know, we grew up with these genre movies and now kind of make our own content where we're lovingly discussing these films. And so
there's, and you have trilogy. A wonderful audience on YouTube. I still see people who will light up and say, Cecil, you know.
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I have fostered a really cool audience, people that just are there because they love movies. And I think that's one of the things that is different with my stuff versus a lot of other movie channels, is there's a lot of the other, like, really big channels. They just, yep, they hate so many movies. Consequently, you have fostered an audience that is going to be very snobbish and very,
unfortunately,
you know, anti-movie. And with me, it's like, I get on there, I love movies, and I pull in a lot of other people that are like, oh,
you're dry wit, and trivia is well inserted into your narrative.
Thank you. I always said, when I first started doing this way back in 2010, I was like, I'm not using a radio voice. I'm not being somebody else, because there's a lot of people that play characters, and there's not, you know, more power to them. But I am myself. I'm using my voice. I am.
It feels safe. Like your voice, because
it feels
the
like
passion is coming through. Because I see other people, and it's very clear they're reading off a script their girlfriend has written. It's like, no, it's not working. It's not cutting, because it's, you're just reading off all the trivia we've already read about on IMDb and Wikipedia. You've got to make this stuff, you know, yours. Hell, maybe reach out to these guys, get their take on it, and they can blast all this IMDb stuff, you know. And then I see other people stealing each other's stuff, and it's like, can you mind citing it? I always try to cite the other podcast I heard some trivia on, you know.
Yeah, there's some other channels out there that they'll take your stuff and just repackage it and make a top 10 list or something. Mm-hmm. It's just infuriating. It's like, oh yeah, no, I just did all that work for you to just to take it easy.
And now you added your blooper signature or imprint on top of my imprint. That's so not cool. I am so gonna report that to YouTube. But
exactly. Then they don't do anything.
And then, I mean, don't get me wrong, you already gotta get past the trolls who are gonna make fun of, oh, you got a blister on your face. I'm like, that's so helpful. Thank you, Mr. Insecure Troll in Bulgaria or wherever you are, you know, talking shit.
Yeah.
You're welcome back anytime. We'll keep scheduling some other fun stuff, and we're going to premiere this in a month where we talk about puppets. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Send me a link and I will send it out.
We were both kind of breaking up a bit, but I think we're still acceptable because I'm going to put this through Level later. And
okay, good. Yeah, I mean, it's you came through clear with me, so
and I could still hear what you're saying, and you know, this happens on Zoom. It doesn't matter how many times we do it, you know.
It's, it's the internet. It's always going to take a poop.
Glad we got some B movie lessons here in this process. We talked here and there about Puppet Master, but it was ultimately about the definition of crazy cult movies. So
yeah, I think it's a variety. It'll be for people who want to listen to all kinds of stuff. They'll get all kinds of ideas.
Absolutely.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I didn't know if you could see what I'm doing.
Oh, you're doing the Spock thing?
Yeah. Yeah. No, sorry. I'm such a geek.
No worries, man. I got you. No, I love Star Trek. Just was like, I'm pretty sure that's what you're doing, but
yeah, no, I'm making an Albert Pyon reference.
I don't know. You're throwing up gang signs.
Yeah, no, I'm referencing The Substitute. I'm referencing Vin Diesel movie. I don't know what I'm referencing. Some crazy B picture that I'm ashamed to know. Anyway, Godspeed to you. Keep kicking ass.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up Review Show.